Two more crew members of the COVID-19 stricken ship from India that arrived in the Philippines last week taken to the hospital. The mayor of Puerto Princesa blaming the surge in COVID-19 cases in his city to the easing of quarantine restrictions for travelers will speak to the Octa Research Group as to why they're referring to Puerto Princesa and three other cities as areas of concern. Manila's former ambassador to Washington asking why President Duterte is blaming the Aquino administration and not China for breaching the Scarborough-Shoal withdrawal deal. And Filipino rower Chris Nevarez punches his ticket to the Tokyo Olympics. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad to have you with us today. We begin here in the Philippines, where two more seafarers aboard the vessel that came from India were rushed to a hospital. Port authorities say the oxygen levels of two crew members of the MV Athens Bridge plummeted, but they are now in stable condition. 12 of the 21 seafarers aboard the ship had tested positive for COVID-19. Two of them were evacuated last week after turning critical. Health officials have yet to determine if the crew members were infected with a variant that was first detected in India. It is said to be more transmissible and is causing the catastrophic surge in the South Asian country. The number of COVID-19 cases in the Philippines now at over 1.1 million. That's after the health department recorded 7,100 new cases Sunday. There were also over 200 new deaths, marking the highest death toll since April 12th of this year. This brings the total of COVID-19 deaths in the country to over 18,400. New recoveries, meanwhile, stand at over 9,000. The Octa Research Group identifying four areas of concern due to surging COVID-19 cases. These include the cities of Puerto Princesa, Cagayan de Oro, Zamboanga, and Bacolod. Octa Research now urging government to speed up vaccinations in these areas. The group's daily analysis showed Puerto Princesa had the biggest spike in new cases at 78%. The city's officials blaming the easing of travel restrictions for the surge.
Naglabas ang national government ng unified travel protocol na hindi na pwedeng mag-quarantine. I-screen na lang yung lahat ng dumarating at yung mga may symptoms, yun na lang ang ipu-quarantine. So, palagay ko doon kasi nagsimula.
As for Metro Manila, Octa says average daily cases in the region have gone down to 2,100 from 5,500. But it warns quarantine restrictions in the area should still be eased gradually. Joining us now is Professor Ranjit Rai of the Octa Research Group. Glad you could join us today, Professor Rai. Nice to see you again. There you go.
Good afternoon to you and to all our televiewers.
Okay, nice to see you again, Professor Rai. A bit spotty there for a moment, but now let's get on with the discussion. When you talk about these provinces that you have classified as areas of concern, what do you think are the similarities among these provinces, aside from a rise, of course, in the COVID-19 cases there, Professor?
Well, you know, it's the sudden rise in cases is always a cause for concern. And given the fact that we have these game-changing variants already in the countries, such as the B117, or better known as the UK variant and the South African variant, and our own homegrown P3, no, a virus very contagious, you're always alarmed when there's a sudden increase in cases. And that's the reason why Octa monitors. It's really more as an early warning to the public. It's more. You know, DOH is also doing this, by the way, and we're closely coordinating with the DOH. But the DOH arm that's doing this doesn't go to the press and to media. We do, and so we use the same methodologies. We also look at the same areas. And when we see something distinct, like a sharp rise, especially given the context of these new variants, we're alarmed, and we let the people know, we let the media know, we let the local governments know. Hmm. And the reasons for these sudden upticks, which could definitely, you know, become a surge, no, if we don't have appropriate and timely responses, it's really the movement of people, no. Border controls are a big issue, Carmina. We, you know, we're trying to save our tourism industry, and we understand the situation of the DOT, but really we need to strengthen border controls. We need to strengthen our quarantines because they're leaky, and we need to strengthen the capacity of local governments outside of the NCR to do testing, tracing, and isolation. Hmm. And in these areas, what we're suggesting is to expand, okay, testing, tracing, and isolation, because that's the only way. That's the best science is telling us. That's the way to deal with an upsurge in cases.
All right, Professor Rai, we talk about mobility, and I want to zero in on Zamboanga at this point. I was talking to the mayor of Zamboanga last week, and she did say this is the reason. Zamboanga is a transit point, and because it is such, people go in and out. And that's where she also saw, when she saw the cases rise as well. Now, how possible is it that the cases there in Zamboanga, Puerto Princesa, other cities as well that you mentioned, how possible is it that the cases there will lead to another surge similar to what happened before the surge this year? Because I remember talking to Dr. Guido, and we were talking about Cebu at that time, just before the UK variant unleashed its wrath and caused our surge. Is that going to happen as well? Is the data pointing to that, Professor?
Right now, well, we don't know what variant is looming in these areas now. But one thing's for sure, if we don't have timely and appropriate responses like expanded testing, effective contact tracing, and more isolation facilities built in those areas, we will have a surge. Okay. The idea there is that we have not contained this virus now, where our vaccination is slow, and because of so many challenges like supply and whatever, you know. Because it's slow, countries like the Philippines, where there's a high density, will always be susceptible to surges. That's why biosurveillance is important. You know, we have to strengthen biosurveillance at the regional level, not just in the NCR. We need to be able to find out what variants are going around. Number two, we have to expand capacity to do testing. You know, if you have expanded testing, you will be able to find out who is infected and isolate them and do contact tracing. Now, that's improved a lot in the NCR Plus, but not everywhere else, especially in places like Puerto Princesa, in Cagayan de Oro, in Bacolod. So we need to strengthen the capacity of these local governments to manage COVID. And it can be managed, no? If you have those, if you have T3. No? And of course, expanding facilities for treatment. Hmm. That means not just beds and ventilators, but hiring more healthcare workers. Right now, we feel if the local governments will do the necessary, timely and appropriate responses, you can prevent a terrible surge like that in Metro Manila, that from those areas.
Okay, let's talk about the cases that we have now. Points to these cases going down. Here's a question, though, Professor: are we past that rebound point since the easing of the restrictions? What does the data suggest? Because you remember, we had that GCQ a couple of weeks back. We were seeing the effects of that GCQ, but then we gradually eased to MECQ, which, you know, some experts feared, because they're saying that this might just eat into the gains of the previous GCQ. But with the cases going down, does the data suggest that we're past that rebound point? Professor?
Okay. Let me clarify what your statement. So you are referring to the ECQ and then the easing
right,
to MECQ.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so to clarify for our audience, you know, the problem is we have these game-changing variants are very contagious, and now we're finding out quite lethal also. Okay, and so we cannot let our guard down. There's, you know, the reversal of trends is a very real thing. We've seen it in other countries. No, can you imagine the UK now, where there's a significant portion of the population already vaccinated? The Indian variant has come in, and there's now a surge in some places. So the key here is to be constantly vigilant. No, there's no point of no return, because these trends are not permanent; they're reversible. Okay, that being said, the NCR plus is on the right path. We're trending in the right direction. Okay, our R has gone down from a high of 2. Now it's 0.69. Our total number of cases, daily average cases, which went as high as almost 6,000, we're now down to 2,000 cases. This is significant, but we had to pay for it through a very costly lockdown, which has lasted a month na, no? And the big question is, are we ready to move to GCQ? Right now, we've had significant gains in terms of hospital capacity. Also, our hospitals are less filled now, at something like over 50%. Our ICUs, on the other hand, there are indicators that they're still sticky. So, for example, ICUs are still filled up, 69%, 70%. Okay. Number two, our attack rate, no, the proportion of the population affected by this virus, no, and this is a very important measure, no, to understand the outbreak in certain cities. When you look at the NCR plus, specifically Metro Manila, out of 17 LGUs, only one is not in critical level. That's Navotas.
So, and why is that seven. So?
Well, why
what's
is
that,
it?
What's, no, the, yeah. what's, so, the attack, what's the attack rate in Navotas?
Okay, so just to give you a sense, though, the standard used by the DOH is the same as the standard used by OCTA. So it should be 7, no? For per 100,000. So Navotas would be somewhere at 6. Malabon would be at 10. Manila would be at 11. Valenzuela would be at 16. Place like Quezon City, 16.
Okay.
Taguig is 22. Pateros is 58. So, you know, this is not the ideal is below 7. So it's trending in the right direction, NCR plus. It's healing, but it's taking some time, you know, because we've opened up a significant portion of the economy in the NCR plus. So it's taking, you know, the positive changes are much slower now.
But now, here's the thing.
If you open up,
yeah,
will there be a resurge? There's always that possibility.
Exactly, Professor Rai, because when you went down through the attack rates of the different LGUs, of the different cities, and you mentioned that Pateros has an attack rate of 58, once you ease restrictions, I mean, it only shows you that the virus is still there. Mm. I mean, all you need is for the attack rate of 58 in Navotas to be spread in the other cities once you ease the restrictions, and you have another problem altogether.
You have a resurge, you know. And you know, we don't even know if the Indian virus has actually come in. You know, we're still waiting for the genome sequencing of the quarantined people who came from India. We don't know. Also, we're not yet complete in the process of rolling out, no, the interventions of government and local government to expand healthcare facilities, expand contact tracing in particular, and isolation units. No, so there's a big segment of OCTA arguing that we may need some more time to heal, just to sustain the downward trend. We need an exit strategy from this current MECQ, which, by the way, is very, very lax and flexible, no? It's more like a GCQ. So as to preserve the hard-earned gains that we had over the last month. A resurge is very possible, and it becomes really problematic if a contagious variant takes hold. And every time there's a contagious variant that takes hold, we have a surge. So we just had we're in the middle of exiting, no? We're in the midst of exiting a current surge. We're not yet there. If another variant comes in, a surge occurs. So we're really hoping that these uncertainties will be dealt with stronger border controls, plugging in leaky quarantines. Mm-hmm. Our sense is in OCTA is, you know, an additional, if it was purely on health basis only, another week or two would not hurt, you know. But then again, that's complicated, Carmina, because the economy has to be taken into consideration. And that's why we will support any position of government. But definitely, the data shows attack rates are still high. They're at the critical level still. Positivity is still high but going down at 14%. Total daily cases have gone down significantly, but they're still above pre-surge levels at around 2,000. So these are things to consider. Government has decided.
But then over the weekend, we also, I think you saw that too, that snapshot of what happened in Caloocan, an urban resort opening to dozens of people there. I mean, this is clearly something that we cannot afford, because that would just really eat away, as you said, in the gains of the quarantines that we had, the restrictions that we had in the past couple of weeks. Now, I want to talk now about the next milestones. And I don't want to talk about the grim ones, but the ones that will tell you that we've gotten ahead of the virus. What are the next milestones that we're looking forward to, Professor?
You know, we're optimistic. If we can continue with our interventions now and prevent, and expand testing, tracing, and improvements in isolation, expand our healthcare workers to expand capacity of our hospitals, we will be able to sustain this trend. And we're seeing, even at by May 14, that we're going to go down to below 2,000 cases. Now, that will stop if we open abruptly to GCQ. You know, that's the problem. This comes at a great cost to us. You know, if we are not able to sustain this downward trend, it costs us lives and livelihood. So it's important for us to open the economy up when we're ready to open up. And in our view, we still need time to heal. Okay, and we're looking forward. We're optimistic. Now, if we work together, as you said, if we work together, and that means a cooperation. The idea about COVID response is that it's not just government response. It's a governance issue, meaning when you say governance, it includes the private sector, civil society, working together with government, dealing with COVID as a shared responsibility and a collective response. Mm-hmm. So when we have surges, it's a collective failure of these three sectors. And that's why we should learn from what happened over the last month. We need to work together more. Things that happened, for example, like in Caloocan, cannot happen. We are not yet where we're supposed to be as far as this epidemic is concerned. And we're hoping to maintain the downward trend while vaccines are pouring in. And vaccines will pour in by June. You know, latter part of May, we're already going to get a lot of vaccines. So we're hoping to hold the fort until these vaccines come in.
All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. Hold the fort. Thank you so much, Professor Ranjit Rai of the Okta Research Group. Nice to see you again. You take care and you keep safe.
Thank you. Thank you, Carmina.
Right, moving on. We were just talking about this, that popular resort in northern Caloocan. Well, it was closed down by authorities after photos of the crowded establishment went viral on social media. The local government of Caloocan City will file charges against the management of the Gubat Sa Ciudad Resort and the village captain. Individuals inside the resort are also facing charges. They're all now being asked to isolate and to undergo COVID-19 testing. The village captain said the resort, which has been closed for the past few weeks, only opened for Mother's Day. Resort facilities are not allowed to operate under the modified enhanced community quarantine. The new Philippine police chief hits the ground running. Police General Guillermo Eleazar ordered his men to prepare detention facilities for face mask violators. Last week, President Rodrigo Duterte ordered the police to arrest those not wearing improperly wearing face masks. Eleazar says they are also coordinating with local government units to create a space where the violators may be held while observing physical distancing.
We know that a lot of our LGUs have already ordinances corresponding to these violations. Pero meron ding iba, sabihin natin wala. So, imbitahan pa rin natin sila. And we can detain them or let them stay in the police station for at least 12 hours. But what we have done is to coordinate with the different barangays so that hindi na ito sa police station dadalhin. Doon sa mga barangay or ibang lugar na ipoprovide ng ating LGU so that hindi sila magkukumpul-kumpul at maiwasan na ang pagkahawa-hawa.
Quezon City Mayor Jo Montes says face mask violators in her city will only be made to pay fines, but they will be arrested if they defy authorities.
We did not want to arrest them and detain them because of the fact that we want to enforce social distancing. And I think given the sizes of our detention facilities in our police stations and even in the barangays, we did not have enough space for that. And
India looking to tap former army medics to bolster its healthcare system. This as the number of COVID-19 cases and deaths in the country continue to surge, prompting angry calls for a nationwide lockdown.
India is to recruit hundreds of former army medics to support its overwhelmed healthcare system, the Defense Ministry said on Sunday. The country is grappling with record COVID-19 infections and fatalities. Deaths rose by more than 4,000 for a second consecutive day on Sunday, prompting angry calls for a complete nationwide lockdown. The Defence Ministry said some 400 medical officers are expected to serve on a contract for a maximum of 11 months, adding that other defence doctors had also been roped in for online consultations. On Sunday, India reported 4,092 deaths over the previous 24 hours. That's after its highest ever single-day death toll, 4,187, the day before. With an acute shortage of oxygen and beds in many hospitals, and with morgues and crematoriums overflowing, experts say the actual number of fatalities and cases could be much higher than reported. Pressure is mounting on Prime Minister Narendra Modi to announce a nationwide lockdown. He's been criticised for allowing huge gatherings at a religious festival and for holding large election rallies over the past 2 months, even as COVID-19 cases were surging. Many Indian states have imposed their own strict lockdowns. On Sunday, New Delhi's chief minister said a lockdown there would be extended by a week, and subway train services will also be suspended. For some residents in the capital, that's a cause for concern. Hospital worker Rahul says he's heading for his evening shift. He doesn't know how he will get home and does not have enough money to travel in taxis. The Indian Medical Association has called for a complete, well-planned, pre-announced lockdown instead of sporadic night curfews and restrictions.
The European Union growing skeptical over the usefulness of waiving patent rights for the COVID-19 vaccines as a way to fight the pandemic. Here's the full story.
World leaders are weighing in after the U.S. said it would support suspending patent protection for COVID-19 vaccines in an effort to boost global production. German Chancellor Angela Merkel said on Saturday she was opposed to waiving those protections, arguing it could jeopardize the quality of shots against the disease.
I made it clear that I do not believe that giving away patents is the solution to make vaccines available to more people. If a patent is given away and the quality is no longer controlled, I see more risk than chance.
Speaking to reporters before the second day of an EU summit in the Portuguese city of Porto, the chairman of EU leaders, Charles Michel, said the way to fight the pandemic now was to quickly make more shots and lift export curbs on them in countries like the United States and Britain that make vaccines but do not sell them to others, a sentiment echoed by Merkel and French President Emmanuel Macron. But Pope Francis on Saturday said he supported the waiver. In a speech to a global fundraising concert to promote fair access to vaccines, the Pope said the world was infected with the, quote, virus of individualism, which prevents, quote, an internationalism of vaccines. U.S. President Joe Biden backed a move to suspend patent protection for vaccines on Wednesday, heeding calls from India, South Africa, and more than 100 other countries over the objections of pharmaceutical companies. Skeptics of the proposal argue that the time it would take to get the World Trade Organization to agree on the measure and to build expanded vaccine-making capacity would be too slow to be a timely solution to the world's coronavirus caseload anyway.
I'm going to take a break now. Still ahead, a former ambassador says President Duterte should be blaming Beijing and not the Aquino administration for breaching the Scarborough withdrawal deal. Plus, another Filipino qualifies for the Tokyo Olympics. More on that when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines. Stay with us here on ANC. And we are back. You're still with Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Two more crew members of the COVID-19 stricken ship from India that arrived in the Philippines last week taken to a hospital. The mayor of Puerto Princesa blaming the surge in COVID-19 cases in his city to the easing of quarantine restrictions for travelers. The Octo Research Group says the case of Puerto Princesa and three other cities it considers as areas of concern highlights the need to strengthen border controls and the capacity of local governments outside Metro Manila. Manila's former ambassador to Washington asking why President Duterte is blaming the Aquino administration and not China for breaching the Scarborough Shoal withdrawal deal. And Filipino rower Chris Nevarez punches his ticket to the Tokyo Olympics. Back with more news. President Duterte's remarks on the West Philippine Sea are matters of serious concern with serious implications past the term of the current administration. Vice President Lenny Robredo says the arbitral decision should not be taken lightly as the Philippines reach this point due to the invasion of its territories. She believes Duterte's remarks could have easily been debunked if he pushed through with his debate challenge against former Senior Associate Justice Antonio Carpio. A vocal critic of the administration, Robredo says she decided not to discuss political matters over the past few months due to the surge in COVID-19 cases. But she says Duterte's latest pro-China remarks prompted her to speak up. Meanwhile, Manila's former envoy to Washington calling out President Duterte for not blaming China for breaching the Scarborough withdrawal deal in 2012. Former Philippine ambassador to the United States, Jose Aquisha, said the Philippines would not have pulled out its ships from Scarborough Shoal back then had China not agreed to a simultaneous withdrawal. President Duterte has been blaming the Aquino administration for the withdrawal of Filipino vessels in the area.
At that time, the numbers were just very much against us. They had five large vessels. We had one. We had one Bureau of Fisheries, not even as large as the BRP, Ramon Alcaraz. It was probably half the size. And the rest were fishing vessels. So Kirk Campbell said, Ambassador, I think it's best if the Philippines withdraws its ships from Scarborough Shoal. And I said, I cannot make that recommendation. What I would suggest is a simultaneous withdrawal of the ships. So he said he was going to go back to talk to the Chinese ambassador, Zhang Yesui, and see if they would agree to it. So he came back to me and he said that they had agreed. So, okay, we decided to suggest a specific day and a time that there would be simultaneous withdrawals of the ships, both from the Philippines and the U.S. So with that agreement, I went to Secretary De Rosario and made the recommendation, who in turn went to President Noynoy Aquino to recommend that we have a simultaneous withdrawal of ships. I cannot understand why he is not blaming the Chinese for having breached the agreement.
Quisha calls Duterte's stance on the West Philippine Sea issue a tragedy. For retired Supreme Court Associate Justice Antonio Carpio, President Duterte is siding with China because he thinks Chinese President Xi Jinping is his personal protector. Carpio says Duterte believes his Chinese counterpart will protect him if there's a coup.
The president has always said that if there is a mutiny or coup d'etat against me, President Xi Jinping will protect me. So I think that is what's behind his mind, that President Xi Jinping is his personal protector against his own military if there is a coup d'etat. So he will side whenever possible with China against the Philippine interest. And we see that every day.
The country's new police chief vows to clean up the PNP. Police General Guillermo Eleazar says he will sack any police officer who steps out of line. Eleazar is looking to open a complaint referral and monitoring information system to bolster his campaign against rogue cops.
Ito, pwede yung parating sa akin, Jesus, ang inyong sumbong doon sa ilulunsad namin na itong complaint referral and monitoring information system. Doon kasi pag tinext nyo, meron talaga tayo mga parang call center agents na mag-a-analyze yan, then i-encode yan, ipapadala sa mga concerned, gawin nila yung trabaho nila, gagawin pa rin natin yan. Bukas, maaari mag-inspect ako o sa isang araw, hindi ko sasabihin, di ba? Basta mag-inspect na lang tayo.
Meanwhile, Eleazar vows to stop the culture of hiring new recruits just because they are connected to high-ranking officials. That's as the PNP looks to add 17,000 police officers this year.
This year, ang aming pong kota, or I mean, ang gusto namin i-hire is 17,000 na patrolman and patrolwoman.
The Philippine Commission on Elections still far from its registration goal for the 2022 national elections. As of April, the poll body says it has only reached 2.8 million of its 7 million target. Comelec offices in areas under modified enhanced community quarantine, which include Metro Manila, are still closed. This is severely limiting the Comelec's operations. Despite this, the Comelec says the registration deadline of September 30 can no longer be extended.
Unfortunately, hindi na siya pwedeng extend, no? Because the day after the close of registration, filing na ng COC, which means we have to start preparing for election day documents. Now, we print only the exact number of ballots as there are voters. So kung moving target yung number of voters, edi moving target din yung printing natin. Medyo mahirap yan. So we have to put a stop to it at some point.
As much as possible, iwasan natin yung deadline. Kasi wala talagang magandang voting experience pag deadline na ang haba. Yung 2 to 3 minutes, this registration period, magiging 8 to 10 hours pag deadline.
Yes, totoo po yan. So, and may I add na pagka kami nagpaparehistro, alas 12 ng hating gabi, inaabot kami pag last day.
News overseas now, the death toll from an explosion outside a school in Afghanistan's capital, Kabul, has risen to at least 68. And as this report tells us, doctors are struggling to provide medical care to over 100 injured.
It should have been a place of learning for young Afghans. But on Saturday afternoon, it was the scene of a bloody attack. Backpacks, textbooks, a pair of girls' shoes, all remnants of an explosion outside a Kabul school. Officials say the death toll has risen to at least 68, with doctors struggling to provide medical care to the 165 injured. An eyewitness told Reuters all but 7 or 8 of the victims were schoolgirls going home after finishing their lessons. At a nearby hospital, doctors tend to the injured and distressed relatives search for their loved ones. This girl says they were just leaving school when a car exploded. Outside, people read the names of the victims. Inside a morgue, a man looks for his relatives among the bodies. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani blamed the attack on Taliban insurgents on Saturday, but a spokesman for the Taliban denied involvement, saying the group condemns any attacks on Afghan civilians. Families of the victims blamed the Afghan government and Western powers for failing to put an end to violence. The attack comes a week after remaining US and NATO troops began exiting Afghanistan with a mission to complete the drawdown by September 11, which will mark the end of America's longest war.
Dozens injured in Jerusalem as police clashed with Palestinians on the most sacred night of Ramadan. More in this report.
Israeli police used stun grenades and water cannon on Palestinian youths as clashes erupted outside the Old City in Jerusalem on Saturday. Tensions have been mounting in the city throughout the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. That's as anger grows over the potential eviction of Palestinians from homes on land claimed by Jewish settlers. On Saturday, tens of thousands of Muslim worshippers prayed at the Al-Aqsa Mosque in the Old City on Islam's holy night of Laylat al-Qadr. In the streets leading to the Old City gates, Palestinians threw stones, lit fires, and tore down police barricades. They were repelled by Israeli officers on horseback and in riot gear. According to the Palestinian Red Crescent, at least 80 people were injured, including minors and a one-year-old girl. 14 were taken to hospital. Israeli police said at least one officer was hurt. Outside the Old City, 27-year-old Mahmoud says police have stopped them from entering for a week. Look how they are firing at us, he says. How can we live? Israeli authorities said earlier on Saturday that security was being beefed up in anticipation of confrontations to enable freedom of worship and maintain order and security. That's after violence erupted on Friday night at Al-Aqsa Mosque. At least 205 Palestinians and 18 Israeli officers were injured, drawing international condemnations and calls for calm. Hostility has been intensifying amid a long-running legal case over the East Jerusalem neighbourhood of Sheikh Jarrah. Numerous Palestinian families there are facing eviction. The district has witnessed nightly clashes. Police said dozens of protesters threw stones there on Saturday. And tensions are expected to remain high over the coming days. On Monday, Israel's Supreme Court will hold a hearing on the Sheikh Jarrah evictions. It's the same day that Israel marks Jerusalem Day, its annual celebration of the capture of East Jerusalem during the 1967 Middle East War.
After days of speculation of where it would hit, remnants of China's biggest rocket landed in the Indian Ocean on Sunday, the bulk of its components destroyed upon re-entry. Take a look.
Chinese state media have reported that remnants of China's biggest rocket landed in the Indian Ocean on Sunday. That puts an end to days of speculation over where the debris would hit and anxiety of it possibly landing on human-populated areas. CCTV said that most of the rocket was burnt up as it re-entered the Earth's atmosphere before reportedly landing west of the Maldives. The U.S. Space Command confirmed its re-entry over the Arabian Peninsula, though it said it was unclear if the debris fell on land or water. It also said it would not be releasing the exact site of impact. The rocket, one of China's Long March 5 series, blasted off from China's Hainan Island at the end of April. It's part of a series of missions that will shuttle material or possible crew from Earth to space in order to build a permanent Chinese space station by 2022.
In Italy, Neanderthal remains discovered in caves to the south of Rome. Here are details.
Archaeologists have discovered the remains of 9 Neanderthals at a prehistoric site near Rome, Italy's culture ministry said on Saturday. 8 of the remains are dated to between 50,000 and 68,000 years ago, the ministry said in a statement. But the oldest is from much earlier, between 90,000 and 100,000 years ago. Neanderthals, the closest ancient relatives of humans, died out about 40,000 years ago. It's unclear what killed them off, though theories include an inability to adapt to climate change and increased competition from modern humans. The find occurred in Grotta Quartari, prehistoric caves that were discovered more than 80 years ago in a town around 50 miles south of the Italian capital. Taking into account previous discoveries, there are 11 individuals at the site. Animal remains have also been found, including aurochs, a large extinct bovine.
In business, the Philippine Tariff Commission looking into the petition of the Samahang Industriya ng Agrikultura or SINAG to raise the tariff on pork imports. The group is seeking to increase the in-quota pork tariff rate to 40% and out-quota rate to 44%. The petition comes after the country's economic managers and Philippine senators agreed to lower pork import tariffs to 15 to 25%. The tariff make that the current tariff on pork imports within the minimum access volume is at 30%. Meanwhile, local hog raisers renewed their calls for the declaration of a state of calamity due to the African swine fever.
Yung mga tinamaan, dapat bigyan na lang nila ng subsidy kung paano nila matutulungang makapag-alaga muli yung mga tinamaan na. Yung tatamaan pa ng African swine fever, yan ang sinasabi natin na bayaran na 10,000 kada ulo.
In place of indemnification, di ba insurance na lang, si libre na nga eh, from 5,000 to 10,000 na ang insurance coverage. Pag namatay, maximum 10,000.
The Philippine government is lowering tariffs on imported imported pork to address a shortage in domestic supply, which has led to higher prices of meat products. In sports, another Filipino books his ticket to the Tokyo Olympics. Rower Chris Nevarez earned his spot in the men's single sculls. The Philippine Rowing Association says Nevarez is the first Filipino to qualify in that Olympic event in 20 years. Congratulations. And seven-time World Formula One champion Lewis Hamilton came from behind to take the Spanish Grand Prix. Hamilton had to chase down Red Bull's Max Verstappen, whom he overtook with six laps to spare. This is the fifth straight year that the Mercedes driver has won in Spain. Hamilton's 98th career victory gives him a 14-point lead in the driver's standings. Verstappen finished second, while Hamilton's teammate Valtteri Bottas settled for third.
They went for another stop, and then I knew it was over because I was already struggling with the tires, and you could see it every lap. He was just getting closer and closer, so bit of a sitting duck.
I feel great after this. I feel like we can go again. Obviously, the training's working and paying off. Such a close start. Obviously, there was a lot of rubber down on the right-hand side, and the Red Bull obviously got a great start, and then after that, just hunting. And I was so close for so long, and I didn't think in doing that I was going to be able to make the tires last. But I just managed to just keep them in somehow. And it was a long way to come back from 20-odd seconds back. But it was a good gamble. Really great strategy by the team.
In tennis, Germany's Alexander Zverev bags his second Madrid Open title. It came at the expense of Italy's Matteo Berrettini. Zverev won their finals match 6-7, 6-4, 6-3. The German will shift his focus to Rome next week before continuing his pursuit of a maiden Grand Slam title at the Roland Garros.
Sasha, tell me how special it is to be back on the podium at a Masters 1000, and how tough was that?
Yeah, it's great, especially losing the last three finals that I played at a Masters event. This is definitely special, and yeah, I just want to enjoy this one.
In the NBA, the Miami Heat have 1 foot inside the playoffs, led by their star player Jimmy Butler. The Heat held on for a 130-124 win against the Boston Celtics. Miami led by as much as 26 points at the end of the first half, but Boston stormed back only to fall short due to Butler's strong play in the end game. The Heat wingman finished with 26 points and 11 assists. And with the victory, the Heat are now two games ahead of the Celtics for the sixth seed in the Eastern Conference. The teams that finish 7th to 10th place are relegated to the play-in tournament. Another team that's on fire entering the NBA's postseason, the New York Knicks. Derrick Rose had 25 points off the bench to lead the Knicks past the Los Angeles Clippers 106-100. The win broke the Knicks' 8-game skid at the Staples Center and improved their record to 38-30. Barring any major meltdown, the Knicks will clinch their first playoff berth since the 2012-2013 season. The new superhero drama, Jupiter's Legacy, has started streaming on Netflix. Is it worth binge watching? Here's Manny, the movie guy.
What was Dad like when he was younger?
The true meaning of being a superhero is explored in this intriguing 8-episode Netflix series.
I've always pictured you as a superhero with your chiseled looks, quite immortal.
Josh Duhamel and his chiseled looks are front and center in this tale based on the popular Image Comics series from Mark Miller and Frank Quitely.
The makings of a modern tragedy in a lot of ways.
And this modern-day tragedy has Duhamel as Sheldon Sampson, a.k.a. the Utopian, the leader of the Union. His wife and crime-fighting partner is Lady Liberty, played by Leslie Bibb.
She literally has the weight of the world on her shoulder.
That superhero ideal affects their superpowered children. The rebellious Chloe, played by Elena Kampouris.
Kind of like a bad girl with the motivation that I totally understand.
Yes, Annie, we're on the same wavelength here.
Then there's her brother Brandon, a.k.a. the Paragon, played by Andrew Horton.
Well, it was the emotion, Manny. It was the emotion. I'm a very emotional guy.
From show creator Stephen S. DeKnight of Spartacus and Daredevil, Jupiter's Legacy has a great cast of characters like Mike Webb as Fitz, a.k.a. the Flair, and his daughter Petra, a.k.a. the Flair 2, played by Tanika Davis.
Fitz and Petra are loyal to each other.
Loyalty and family dynamics are at the heart of the series, and some of the intriguing characters are Uncle Walt, a.k.a. Brainwave, played by Ben Daniels.
All the characters are so complex.
Perhaps the most complex of all is the relationship between Matt Lanter's Sky Fox and his son, Hutch, played by Ian Quinlan.
I'm also really excited to see the humanity of these people.
That humanity is the reason I'm strongly recommending Jupiter's Legacy. It has a lot to say about American idealism while entertaining you with a bit of boom, bam, and kapow. And for that, Jupiter's Legacy gets 3.5 out of 4 with great power kisses. I'm Manny the Movie Guy for ANC.
And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Playback this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe, you guys. Keep it here on ANC.